Thank you for taking your lunch time to join us today. I hope we can provide a panel that is as nourishing as is appropriate for such a setting. Given what I saw at the booths outside in our various nacho selections, I don't think our competition is that great, but I hope we will be able to satisfy. I'm happy to present today the most recent iteration of a project we've been working on at Texas A&M for several years now. This is work led by Ken McElroy and Jim Burdine and Heather Clark at the Texas A&M School of Public Health. I'm actually currently at the University of Oklahoma, and we're still kind of participating in this project. And I'm excited to hear your reactions to some of what we are finding about who it is that partners with each other within the context of a health service and health promotion network. Let's see which of these... while I get this to... There we go. So I'm going to speak briefly on the context of community health partnership networks, what drew us to this research area, and why it is we think these are there are some important questions to be answered, and how we can design networks to best provide for health services. And then talk about our most recent research project in which we studied actual partnerships between organizations within the network using a longitudinal series of surveys. I'll provide brief results at the end and discuss some practical and theoretical implications of our findings. I believe I'm contractually obligated to read this verbatim. Presenter disclosures, Scott Robinson. The following personal financial relationships with commercial interests relevant to this presentation existed during the past 12 months. No relationships to disclose. Turns out this is not the most lucrative area, so I wasn't exactly, you know, fending people off trying to give me money for this research. Community health partnership networks are in some ways a shift in a paradigm of thinking about public health and public services generally. McElroy et al. In 1988 are noted for their work in popularizing what they called an ecological perspective, that to understand community health is to understand the ecology of a community. That means the interactions between organizations within that community, governmental and non-governmental, health and other organizations that don't necessarily think of themselves as health organizations, the individuals, the socioeconomic environment, all of this working together as an ecology. Such a perspective actually emphasizes the public in public health. What distinguishes public health research from medical research and the emphasis on, say, dyadic relationships between doctors and patients or the like, the ecological perspective focuses on the public as both the beneficiary of public health interventions, but also the complex series of interactions that any intervention has to understand and affect if permanent public health improvements are to be achieved. Within this ecological perspective, it soon becomes clear that it's important to engage local actors, empowering these actors to link together to provide health services, that health services are not delivered through a single organization to a single set of recipients, but are instead an ecology of multiple organizations. Burdine's work in 2007 emphasized, for example, that we have to engage across sectors, that both nonprofit and government and for-profit organizations are all part of this ecology. And thus, to understand how health partnerships work requires understanding how organizations link up across these sectors to provide a diverse array of health services. This leads us to a major question. How do we manage these networks of health organizations? They are complex, they are diverse, they are under tremendous stress, and they require a variety of resources. So it becomes a complex managerial problem. Today, I want to focus specifically on the issue of member connectivity. If we believe these networks are important and that partnerships between organizations are vital to the successful delivery of health services, we need to understand how it is that these organizations link up, how they connect. Now, there's not much literature in interorganizational research as to why some organizations are more likely to connect with other organizations. At least there is not as much as there is at the individual social network level. If we look at research in individual social networks, there's a broad tradition that focuses on what's called homophily, McPherson, 2001, provides a nice review of this literature. At the individual level, people tend to be attracted to other people like themselves, defined in ways that they define similarity, that they define likeness. We want to build from this to investigate the extent to which organizations partner with other organizations that are like themselves and identify how do organizations define similarity in this context. I found in some previous work that this works well in interorganizational networks and disasters, specifically some research into how schools partner with other organizations following a natural disaster revealed some complexity, but also some homophily in how the organizations connected. They tended to connect with organizations like themselves, as defined either as also being an education organization or also being within the same geographic boundary. But these are already different types of homophily than we see at the individual level, where the focus is largely on demographic similarity as the basis of homophily. So the question for this particular research project was whether sector, that is nonprofit versus government sector, or really non-governmental versus government sector, is a type of similarity that activates homophilic networking behaviors. Are nonprofit and non-government organizations more likely to connect with each other? Are government organizations more likely to connect with each other? And do they, in this way, mirror the homophilic behaviors we expect from individual social networking? To do this research, we needed a lot of information. We needed information about organizations, about their characteristics, and their relationships between organizations. The result is a complex data structure. We needed what in statistics we'd call a traditional rectangular data set of organizations and their characteristics. But we also needed networking data in the form of an adjacency matrix, that is, which organizations are connecting with whom. So without getting into too much of the details, we have to combine two different types of data sets together to do an actual network analysis. To build these data sets, we've been conducting a series of surveys starting in 2004 of the Brazos Health Valley Partnership, a health policy network that was funded at this time, and this is actually part of the initial evaluation project or component of their funding. Since in the intervening 10 years, we have added and deleted partners as they've come into and out and left the network, some of the organizations folding entirely, some of them merging, and have four of the administrations of this survey sample to reflect the overall network and who's partnering with whom. This report is based on the most recent administration of the survey from 2013. In previous surveys, we sent the surveys to all executive directors and CEOs. The response rates typically between 70 to 89% for the first three surveys. Actually, I don't have the updated response rate number for the fourth survey, but I'm told it's in that ballpark, but I can't get you an exact number. In these surveys, we ask questions about connectivity. For every organization, we ask about every other organization. With whom do you share information? With whom do you jointly plan, share resources, or have formal memoranda of agreement for the provision of health services? And it's this last question we're going to focus on today. That is linkages between organizations based on who has formal memoranda of agreement. We also asked about some of the demographics of the organization, by which I mean the budgets of those organizations, their size in terms of personnel, and then the sector of the organization, governmental or non-governmental. And we are going to focus on this last demographic characteristic for this study today. So we performed what's called an exponential random graph model. Big word, fancy mathematics behind it, but I'll spare you most of those details. Most work in network analysis is focused on descriptive network analysis. So you get a picture of the network, and then you can describe the network based upon measures of, say, centrality, density, and the like. We wanted to build, however, an inferential network, something much more like you'd expect from a traditional regression analysis, where we're trying to test a hypothesis about whether sector is promoting or interfering with connections between organizations. So we needed to move past the traditional descriptive characteristics to an inferential model. There are network regression models. The most famous of these is QAP regression, quadrature assignment procedure regression. This links the existence of a tie, say the presence of a memoranda between two organizations, to the existence of some other tie. Maybe if they shared information, are they more likely to have memoranda of agreement? But this approach has been criticized because it cannot incorporate aspects of the network structure. If the network itself has a certain structure to it, say a density to it, or a propensity for relationships to experience what's called closure, that is, if you and I are both a friend of, say, a person C, then we are likely to be friends as well. If that sort of triangular closure is present in models, that can interfere with these sorts of network regression models. So what we need is what's called an exponential random graph model, because it allows us to both directly test a hypothesis about the propensity of organizations to partner with each other, but also control for the structural characteristics of the network that could interfere with that inference. So the model itself has dealt with a variety of network structures. I won't go into defining some of this jargon, but some simple characteristics like the number of relationships or edges, the number of triangles, three partners that are all connected to each other, controls for the degree of the average degree of the network, how many partnerships organizations tend to have, the density of the network, and also other controls for probabilistic closure, just what that GWESP helps with. For organizational characteristics, we're looking at really two factors: whether organizations in one sector or another are inherently more likely to partner, and whether they're more likely to partner with a matching organization. So, are government organizations more likely to partner is one hypothesis, and then are they more likely to partner specifically with another government organization is a second hypothesis related to sector. I'm not going to have to read through lots of stars and decimal points. For this, I just want to point out that the first seven characteristics are all part of network structure and illustrate how important it is to include this network structure. If any of those had been admitted, we would have a traditional form of omitted variable bias that would interfere with our ability to kind of interpret our core interesting variables, that is, those match and direct effect variables. So rather than trying to interpret the coefficients on some of these in a proportional odds, it's really a log odds model. It's just important to know that they're there and that they influence the behavior, but in this case, have been controlled for. It is interesting to note that there is a positive effect for non-governmental organizations. That's the direct effect. Non-governmental organizations are more likely to partner with other organizations in the form of having memoranda of understanding. This is in comparison to government organizations. That matching two government organizations, that pair is no more likely to have a partnership than would otherwise be the case. So there's no homophily effect there. Interestingly, rather than homophily, we see the opposite occurring between matching non-governmental organizations. Two non-governmental organizations are less likely than would otherwise be predicted to have a memorandum of understanding. So it's more of a... homophobic would be a loaded term here. I mean, as opposite of homophilic relationship. Similarity, in this case, is a disincentive to partnering within this network. Nonprofit organizations, then, are more likely to connect with other members of the health network. They are inherently more collaborative within this network. However, they are less likely to collaborate with other nonprofits once you incorporate that inherent increased propensity. So we don't see evidence of this homophily effect. It suggests, then, that there's an important brokering role for government organizations. If the nonprofits are interacting at a higher proportion, then with whom are they interacting? It has to be the government organization. They are serving as an intermediary between these nonprofit organizations, almost as hubs. In terms of theoretical implications, remember there's lots of stars, didn't really get into the detail of interpreting the coefficients, but structure was very important. Without those variables, it would be difficult to interpret the effect of those matching characteristics or the direct effect of sector on the propensity to collaborate, because we would have left unmodeled the closure within the model, centralization within the model, and the like. In this case, sector is not an important dimension of homophily for more member organizations, but that leaves us asking about whether there are other dimensions. As I mentioned before, within individual-level social networks, the focus is on demographics, but we don't know much about how organizations see themselves as similar or dissimilar from other organizations. I think that professional organizations like this one may be kind of an often unmeasured form of homophily, that organizations that share members in similar professional associations with similar professional identities may be the sort of homophily that's driving these relationships, not necessarily sector, or not necessarily other characteristics, but something we continue to explore. We will also look at alternative relations. This just looked at memoranda of understanding. We would like to look at joint planning, information sharing, and these other relationships to see if different relationships have different characteristics. So maybe there is a homophily effect in some of the other types of activities, but not in what I call a high-cost collaborative activity. Memoranda of understanding involves a sense of commitment and a binding commitment that you don't see, say, in information sharing. So the dynamics may be very different in those cases. We also do have 4 time periods, so we'd like to study temporal dynamics. Without getting into too much, we're still trying to figure out the statistics on this. Longitudinal exponential random graph models exist, but they are notoriously difficult to work with. It gets very, very complicated. So we have challenges in model estimation and the absence of reliable methods for combining this approach to inferential network analysis with the longitudinal power we have of 4 time periods. Well, thank you very much for your attention. Again, the slides are available, so you can see all of our references, contact information, and some model diagnostics at the end. They are kind of pretty figures. They look nice. But if you have any questions, I welcome them. And thank you again for coming.